Welcome, everybody, to the Savitri Reading Group on Infinite Conversations. It's just Andrea and me today, and we're going to go back to the beginning of Book 5, the Book of Love, and reread the first two cantos from Book 5. So we'll get started with a meditation, and then Andrea will lead us off.
Book 5, The Book of Love. Canto 1, The Destined Meeting Place. But now the destined spot and hour were close. Unknowing, she had neared her nameless goal. For though a dress of blind and devious chance is laid upon the work of all-wise fate, our acts interpret an omniscient force that dwells in the compelling stuff of things, and nothing happens in the cosmic play, but at its time and in its foreseen place. To a space she came of soft and delicate air that seemed a sanctuary of youth and joy, a highland world of free and green delight, where spring and summer lay together and strove in indolent and amicable debate, in armed, disputing with laughter who should rule. There expectation beat wide sudden wings, as if a soul had looked out from earth's face, and all that was in her felt a coming change. And forgetting obvious joys and common dreams, obedient to time's call, to the spirit's fate, was lifted to a beauty calm and pure that lived under the eyes of eternity. A crowd of mountainous heads assailed the sky, pushing towards rival shoulders nearer heaven, the armored leaders of an iron line. Earth prostrate lay beneath their feet of stone. Below them crouched a dream of emerald woods and gleaming borders solitary as sleep. Pale waters ran like glimmering threads of pearl. A sigh was straying among happy leaves, cool perfumed with slow pleasure-burdened feet, faint stumbling breezes faltered among flowers.
The white crane stood, a vivid, motionless streak. Peacock and parrot, jeweled soil and tree. The dove's soft moan enriched the enamored air, and fire-winged wild drakes swam in silvery pools, earth couched alone with her great lover heaven, uncovered to her consort's azure eye. In a luxurious ecstasy of joy, she squandered the love music of her notes, wasting the passionate pattern of her blooms and festival riot of her scents and hues. A cry and leap and hurry was around, the stealthy footfalls of her chasing things, the shaggy emerald of her centaur mane, the gold and sapphire of her warmth and blaze. Magician of her rapt felicities, blithe, sensuous-hearted, careless and divine, life ran or hid in her delightful rooms. Behind all brooded nature's grandiose calm. Primeval peace was there, and in its bosom held undisturbed the strife of bird and beast. Man, the deep-browed artificer, had not come to lay his hand on happy, inconscient things. Thought was not there, nor the measurer, strong-eyed toil. Life had not learned its discord with its aim. The mighty mother lay outstretched at ease. All was in line with her first satisfied plan. Moved by a universal will of joy, the trees bloomed in their green felicity, and the wild children brooded not on pain. At the end reclined a stern and giant tract of tangled depths and solemn questioning hills, peaks like a bare austerity of the soul, armored, remote, and desolately grand, like the thought-screened infinities that lie behind the rapt smile of the Almighty's dance.
A matted forest head invaded heaven, as if a blue-throated ascetic peered from the stone fastness of his mountain cell, regarding the brief gladness of the days, his vast extended spirit couched behind. A mighty murmur of immense retreat besieged the ear, a sad and limitless call, as of a soul retiring from the world. This was the scene which the ambiguous mother had chosen for her brief felicitous hour. Here in this solitude, far from the world, her part she began in the world's joy and strife. Here were disclosed to her the mystic courts, the lurking doors of beauty and surprise, the wings that murmur in the golden house, the temple of sweetness and the fiery isle. A stranger on the sorrowful roads of time, immortal under the yoke of death and fate, a sacrificant of the bliss and pain of the spheres, love in the wilderness met Savitri. End of Canto One.
Shall we continue on to Canto Two? Okay. I'll just comment that this canto brought back to me some of the scenes of my retreat, which my brief retreat. I went over the continental divide of Colorado onto the western slope, and I'd driven just on the interstate there before, but I hadn't spent any time there. And some of the scenes of wilderness and that, I mean, there are still people there, but nowhere near like here on the Front Range. I'm north of Denver. So this canto brought some of that to mind. I really fell in love with that area. It was so fecund. It was so green and spacious and mountainous and variegated in all of its all of its scenes. So a wonderful destined meeting place.
There's a few lines in this little canto that I just love so much on the top of 390. Earth couched alone with her great lover, heaven, uncovered to her consort's azure eye. This is an amazing line.
Yeah, and the white crane just before that. I've been going on early morning bike rides. I just came back from one. It goes through these, open space areas where it's away from the roads, and they've allowed for nature to exist there. We have these cranes that you'll see them, and they'll just be there like a question mark.
Yes,
the way that they're
motionless.
Yes, it's really wonderful to see.
Yes, there's something so mystical about cranes and herons.
Mm.
They are just always seem to be like a messenger of the beyond.
Well, I think they're meditating too. Sometimes I come across animals that they're not doing anything in particular. They're not like looking for food or something. Like, I think they're meditating or contemplating. Or playing, like when the birds circle in the sky that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the joy of nature.
The joy. The mighty mother lay outstretched at ease.
Yes.
I love that line too.
I have that underlined also. It's gorgeous.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'll start on Canto 2, Satyavan. All she remembered on this day of fate, the road that hazarded not the solemn depths, but turned away to flee to human homes, the wilderness with its mighty monotone, the morning like a lustrous seer above, the passion of the summits lost in heaven, the titan murmur of the endless woods. As if a wicket gate to joy were there, ringed in with voiceless hint and magic sign, upon the margin of an unknown world, reclined the curve of a sun-held recess. Groves with strange flowers, like eyes of gazing nymphs, peered from their secrecy into open space, boughs whispering to a constancy of light, sheltered a dim and screened felicity, and slowly a supine, inconstant breeze ran like a fleeting sigh of happiness over slumberous grasses pranked with green and gold. Hidden in the forest's bosom of loneliness, amid the leaves, the inmate voices called, sweet like desires enamored and unseen, cry answering to low insistent cry. Behind slept emerald dumb remotenesses, haunt of a nature passionate, veiled, denied to all but her own vision lost and wild. Earth, in this beautiful refuge free from cares, murmured to the soul a song of strength and peace. Only one sign was there of a human tread, a single path shot thin and arrow-like into this bosom of vast and secret life, pierced its enormous dream of solitude.
Here first she met on the uncertain earth the one for whom her heart had come so far. As might a soul on nature's background limned stand out for a moment in a house of dream created by the ardent breath of life, so he appeared against the forest verge inset twixt green relief and golden ray. As if a weapon of the living light, erect and lofty like a spear of God, his figure led the splendor of the morn. Noble and clear as the broad, peaceful heavens, a tablet of young wisdom was his brow. Freedom's imperious beauty curved his limbs. The joy of life was on his open face. His look was a wide daybreak of the gods. His head was a youthful rishi's touched with light. His body was a lover's and a king's. In the magnificent dawning of his force, built like a moving statue of delight, he illumined the border of the forest page. Out of the ignorant, eager toil of the years, abandoning man's loud drama, he had come, led by the wisdom of an adverse fate, to meet the ancient mother in her groves. In her divine communion he had grown, a foster child of beauty and solitude, heir to the centuries of the lonely wise, a brother of the sunshine and the sky, a wanderer communing with depth and march. A Veda knower of the unwritten book, perusing the mystic scripture of her forms, he had caught her hierophant significances, her sphered immense imaginations learned, taught by sublimities of stream and wood, and voices of the sun and star and flame, and chant of the magic singers on the boughs, and the dumb teaching of four-footed things.
Helping with confident steps her slow great hands, he leaned to her influence like a flower to rain, and, like the flower and tree, a natural growth, widened with the touches of her shaping hours. The mastery free natures have was his, and their ascent to joy and spacious calm. One with the single spirit inhabiting all, he laid experience at the Godhead's feet. His mind was open to her infinite mind. His acts were rhythmic with her primal force. He had subdued his mortal thought to hers. Give me one moment. Okay, just a question. All right, let me go back a couple lines there. The mastery free natures have was his, and their ascent to joy and spacious calm. One with the single spirit inhabiting all, he laid experience at the Godhead's feet. His mind was open to her infinite mind. His acts were rhythmic with her primal force. He had subdued his mortal thought to hers. That day, he had turned from his accustomed paths for one who, knowing every moment's load, can move in all our studied or careless steps, had laid the spell of destiny on his feet, and drawn him to the forest's flowering verge. At first, her glance that took life's million shapes impartially to people, its treasure house, along with sky and flower and hill and star, dwelt rather on the bright harmonious scene. It saw the green gold of the slumberous sward, the grasses quivering with the slow wind's tread, the branches haunted by the wild bird's call. Awake to nature, vague as yet to life, the eager prisoner from the infinite, the immortal wrestler in its mortal house, its pride, power, passion of a striving god, it saw this image of veiled deity, this thinking master creature of the earth, this last result of the beauty of the stars, but only saw like fair and common forms. The artist spirit needs not for its work, and puts aside in memory's shadowy rooms. A look, a turn, decides our ill-poised fate.
Thus, in the hour that most concerned her all, wandering unwarned by the slow surface mind, the heedless scout beneath her tenting lids admired indifferent beauty and cared not to wake her body's spirit to its king. So might she have passed by on chance ignorant roads, missing the call of heaven, losing life's aim. But the God touched in time her conscious soul. Her vision settled, caught, and all was changed. Her mind at first dwelt in ideal dreams, those intimate transmuters of Earth's sign that make known things a hint of unseen spheres, and saw in him the genius of the spot, a symbol figure standing mid Earth's seams, a king of life outlined in delicate air. Yet this was but a moment's reverie, for suddenly her heart looked out at him. The passionate seeing used thought cannot match, and knew one nearer than its own close strings. All in a moment was surprised and seized. All in inconscient ecstasy lain wrapped or under imagination's colored lids, held up in a large mirror air of dream, broke forth in flame to recreate the world. And in that flame, to new things she was born. A mystic tumult from her depths arose, hailed, smitten, erect like one who dreamed at ease, life ran to gaze from every gate of sense. Thoughts indistinct and glad in moon-mist heavens, feelings as when a universe takes birth, swept through the turmoil of her bosom's space, invaded by a swarm of golden gods. Arising to a hymn of wonders, priests, her soul flung wide its doors to this new sun. An alchemy worked, the transmutation came. The mission face had wrought the master's spell.
One second again. In the nameless light of two approaching eyes, a swift and faded turning of her days appeared and stretched to a gleam of unknown worlds. Then, trembling with the mystic shock, her heart moved in her breast and cried out like a bird who hears his mate upon a neighboring bough. Hooves trampling fast, wheels largely stumbling ceased. The chariot stood like an arrested wind. And Satyavan looked out from his soul's doors and felt the enchantment of her liquid voice fill his youth's purple ambience and endured the haunting miracle of a perfect face. Mastered by the honey of a strange flower mouth, drawn to soul spaces opening round a brow, he turned to the vision like a sea to the moon, and suffered a dream of beauty and of change, discovered the aureole round a mortal's head, adored a new divinity in things. His self-bound nature foundered as in fire. His life was taken into another's life. The splendid, lonely idols of his brain fell prostrate from their bright sufficiencies, as at the touch of a new infinite, to worship a godhead greater than their own. An unknown And an imperious, an unknown imperious force drew him to her. Marveling, he came across the golden sward. Gaze met, close gaze, and clung in sight's embrace. A visage was there, noble and great and calm, as if encircled by a halo of thought, a span, an arch of meditating light, as though some secret nimbus half was seen, her inner vision still remembering new, a forehead that wore the crown of all her past, two eyes, her constant and eternal stars, comrade and sovereign eyes that claimed her soul, lids known through many lives, large frames of love.
He met in her regard his future's gaze, a promise and a presence and a fire. Saw an embodiment of aeonic dreams, a mystery of the rapture for which all yearns in this world of brief mortality, made in material shape his very own. This golden figure given to his grasp hid in its breast the key of all his aims, a spell to bring the immortal's bliss on earth, to mate with heaven's truth our mortal thought, to lift earth hearts nearer the eternal sun. In these great spirits now incarnate here, love brought down power out of eternity to make of life his new undying base. His passion surged away from fathomless deeps. It leaped to earth from far forgotten heights, but kept its nature of infinity. On the dumb bosom of this oblivious globe, although as unknown beings we seem to meet, our lives are not aliens, nor as strangers join, moved to each other by a causeless force. The soul can recognize its answering soul across dividing time, and on life's roads, absorbed, rapt traveler, turning, it recovers familiar splendors in an unknown face. And touched by the warning finger of swift love, it thrills again to an immortal joy, wearing a mortal body for delight. There is a power within that knows beyond our knowings. We are greater than our thoughts. And sometimes earth unveils that vision here. To live, to love are signs of infinite things. Love is a glory from eternity's spheres. Abased, disfigured, mocked by baser mites that steal his name and shape and ecstasy, he is still the Godhead by which all can change.
A mystery wakes in our inconscient stuff. A bliss is born that can remake our life. Love dwells in us like an unopened flower, awaiting a rapid moment of the soul. Or he roams in his charmed sleep mid thoughts and things. The child God is at play. He seeks himself in many hearts and minds and living forms. He lingers for a sign that he can know, and when it comes, wakes blindly to a voice, a look, a touch, the meaning of a face. His instrument, the dim corporeal mind of celestial insight, now forgetful grown, he seizes on some sign of outward calm, to guide him mid the throng of nature's hints, reads heavenly truths into earth's semblances, desires the image for the Godhead's sake, divines the immortalities of form, and takes the body for the sculptured soul. Loves adoration like a mystic seer, through vision looks at the invisible. In earth's alphabet finds a godlike sense, but the mind only thinks.
Daddy?
Yes, Beatrice.
But Carmen needs her schoolwork, or if she does it tomorrow, then she'll get a zero on everything.
Okay. Like I said, I'll be in just a few minutes. We're gonna just finish this canto. There's a loop there, and I wouldn't know where it is anyway. So
I'll at least unlock the door to text mommy.
Oh yeah, I'll do that. Okay, well, just give me like 10, 15 minutes. All right. Where was I? So, speaking of love. Loves adoration like a mystic seer. Through vision looks at the invisible. In earth's alphabet finds a godlike sense. But the mind only thinks, behold the one for whom my life has waited long unfilled. Behold the sudden sovereign of my days. Heart feels for heart. Limb cries for answering limb. All strives to enforce the unity all is. Too far from the divine, love seeks his truth, and life is blind, and the instruments deceive, and powers are there that labor to debase. Still can the vision come, the joy arrive. Rare is the cup fit for love's nectar wine, as rare the vessel that can hold God's birth. A soul made ready through 1,000 years is the living mold of a supreme descent. These knew each other, though in forms thus strange.
Although to sight unknown, though life and mind hath altered to hold a new significance, these bodies summed the drift of numberless births, and the spirit to the spirit was the same. Amazed by a joy for which they had waited long, the lovers met upon their different paths, travelers across the limitless plains of time, together drawn from fate-led journeyings in the self-closed solitude of their human past, to a swift, rapturous dream of future joy and the unexpected present of these eyes. By the revealing greatness of a look, form smitten, the spirit's memory woke in sense. The mist was torn that lay between two lives. Her heart unveiled and his to find her turned. Attracted as in heaven star by star, they wondered at each other and rejoiced and wove affinity in a silent gaze. A moment passed that was eternity's ray. An hour began. The matrix of new time. End of canto 2. Wow. And how lovely to hear your little boy's voice, this child's voice in the middle of all this innocent space.
The child God is at play.
Yes, she is. Yes, yes. Indeed.
Yeah. It's really beautiful. I'm just reminded of how this canto, or maybe it was the previous one, began. The destined meeting place and I'm not finding the exact line, but the idea that everything that happens at the right time and place.
Yes.
Is the idea.
Right. I think that is very much in the very first beginning of the destined meeting place on the first page, the second paragraph. Our acts interpret an omniscient force that dwells in the compelling stuff of things. And nothing happens in the cosmic play, but at its time and it's in its foreseen place.
Is
that what you were thinking of?
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
So much of that, I think, was maybe fleshed out in the second canto. This, all the preparation that a soul has to go, and conditions have to evolve in order to allow for a meeting like the one described to take
and
place.
How it comes in this unexpected moment, you know?
Almost missed moment, even. The almost missed moment, accidental moment, the moment that could easily, it would seem, have been passed over.
Yes. But then something touches her, right? And she opens. It's so delightful for me to read this. I'm not pretending that, you know, because when Jeffrey and I met, we met by reading Savitri, and then we just decided to meet in person, and it was like all of a sudden we saw each other, and it was immediate, instant, total recognition, and such an amazing delight.
Well, it's like Savitri provides that context. Much like in this canto, there's the context of the forest and this innocent, raw, innocent, natural scene of beauty, which is reflected in each of the lovers' minds, their hearts, their dispositions. And we talked a little bit about how Sri Aurobindo and the mother concretely met, like in the
yes.
And how she kind of saw him, this his bearing and the recognition that, and also the pre-seeing, like she had at least encountered him in a visionary state.
Vision, right. So she was also on a journey to meet him.
Yes.
Across the world.
Yeah.
You know, she arrived by boat.
It's amazing how that happens. I was just really looking forward to just dwelling with the language for a while and the vision of this poem. It's been a few weeks now, two, three weeks.
Yeah.
Myself, I missed the last. Well, you and Jeffrey, Jen, met but didn't read, and so it's been almost a month. And
right.
The honey of a strange flower mouth. That's another mastered by the honey of a strange flower mouth, drawn to soul spaces opening round a brow. He turned to the vision like a sea to the moon.
Oh, that is so gorgeous. That being drawn like a sea to the moon. Oh. Yeah.
The splendid lonely idols of his brain fell prostrate.
Yeah, that is also. That so describes when we are on our internal path to that. And then we meet someone where we can share this space, you know, and everything changes. We think that, so the eternal, the splendid lonely idols of his brain fell prostrate from their bright sufficiencies. We get kind of taught that you have to all find it within. And that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Well, and you pursue a one pursues a vision.
Yeah.
Too, and especially.
Of course. If, and so does the other, right? So does the other in right. on their own, and then suddenly there is a meeting place.
And it's a new infinite, and it's also a new time. That's
yeah.
What comes?
Yeah.
What comes to at the end.
Yes.
Each has been on a journey. Each has already tasted the infinite, the eternal.
Yes.
And their mortality. But there is something new that's being initiated in this meeting.
Yeah.
And at the end, they wondered at each other and rejoiced and wove affinity in a silent gaze. A moment passed that was eternity's ray. An hour began, the matrix of new time.
Yeah. And time with a capital T.
Time with
a
capital
T. So this is like what is seen in the... with Sri Aurobindo and the mother's meeting actually is a turning point in earthly evolution.
Hmm.
As these two beings came and met to do the same work, to do it together.
That's very powerful.
That is when the mother, the divine mother and the divine soul came together.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's almost like a new conception, maybe
like
a recapitulation of like when a seed and egg come together on a spiritual plane, something
right.
new is not born, conceived, at least at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, something has begun. Yeah, an hour began, matrix of a new time. And their whole work is about predicting and bringing down the future. That's what they were doing. Yeah, the power of divine.
About the future. I saw that here. Maybe it was in something else I was reading. But, the sense that they can work on their future.
Yeah, this actually just below that on that last half a page in the middle, to a swift, rapturous dream of future joy. Maybe that's where the word future comes in.
Yes. It was somewhere else as well.
Uh-huh.
But it could have been something else I was reading just a little while ago, too. It had to do with when it was different because it had to do with like when survival needs are met or when certain kinds of set of needs are met, then it opens up a future. It allows us to work on the future. But I think that's what this kind of new hour is. It's the sense that the future becomes available to us, you know, as a new movement, as a new possibility.
Right, and we're actually living right now in a time where everything is breaking down, which it needs to. The old needs to break down. It's painful and disturbing and confusing, but it creates an opening for something new to emerge.
This is true. I mean, this is. I remember wanting this. We wanted the new, and I felt that it had to occur through the status quo or the way things were breaking down. It's not pleasant, and it's not.
No, and we never knew how it would happen, right? And thank God it didn't happen, I mean, so far with nuclear war. That was like the nightmare in the future. Possibility, right?
That's right.
And that it happened with something that nobody is to blame for. I mean, they try, but and it's everywhere. It's amazing.
This is at least the beginning. I mean, with this pandemic, I think it's beginning a new phase in world history. I think there's something to an idea that it's also a dark period, and it's a long,
very, yeah, it won't be easy.
And it's not, we're just starting it in a way. I mean, there, although we can also look to the world wars and a lot of other history, leading up to here, but I think the sense of planetary unity, or the sense that
has never been before.
No, that's a new, I think, emergent. Yes. I mean, that has been an idea that some have had, and it's been a spiritual idea that many have had. But I don't think it's been concretized in quite the way of a shared reality.
And the young people, they have it in their bones. They know that we're all the same. They know it in their bones. They don't need to be convinced. They know that we are old fogies. And we don't have a clue, but they do. they got it. I mean, the ones who are awake, and there are many.
Yeah, there are. I'm often impressed by the young people I meet, and they all seem to be a lot smarter than I was, at this same age. Which is it's humbling.
But also the whole world is available to them.
Yeah.
They have a natural vision that includes so much more than we could ever imagine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree, and the only thing I think is lacking sometimes is more of the spaciousness of mind that I think is tied to pre-digital, like non-digital or analog, organic time.
Well, and they're very young. You know, we didn't do that when we were very young. That comes with, with opening later.
Yeah, that's true.
And that may happen much sooner for them than for us, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I wasn't very sensitive to nature when I was growing up. I mean, it took a...
Oh, yeah.
It was more of a... What did it take exactly? Just some kind of the building of a relationship in a way, like, and valuing it, and seeing or feeling, experiencing the value and the beauty, and stepping outside of like the comfort of how I grew up or where I grew up and the conveniences that I had and the, you know, all the cultural assumptions about that. I feel so drawn to spending more time in the natural world. These cantos awakened some of that for me. And I think also this, just the way that time is prepared, and one doesn't have the full picture. One doesn't see necessarily how the pieces are moving or how the forces are orchestrating things.
Right.
But one does follow a path, and that intuitively leads one where one needs to be.
Right, because somehow we are all guided, right? Each in our own, on our own path, we are guided to exactly where we need to be.
Yeah.
At least when I look back, that is how that seems. You know, I had no clue where I was going, really. And for me, most of my changes has happened by falling in love with somebody. That's how I got to India.
Yeah. There is a power within that knows beyond our knowings. We are greater than our thoughts. And sometimes Earth unveils that vision here. To live, to love are signs of infinite things. Love is a glory from eternity's spheres.
Yeah.
abased, disfigured, mocked by baser mites that steal his name and shape and ecstasy, he is still the Godhead by which all can change.
Yeah.
That's what you were just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I should go soon. The girls.
Yeah, you need to go be with your kids.
Yeah, they're looking for something. They have some schoolwork to get done. Oddly seem motivated to do it, so I'm not sure what's up. There must be something else.
You'll find out.
But I'm so glad that we had this time together and
got
to spend some time with the Savitri.
Yes.
I missed.
Yeah, tune back into the vision, huh?
Yeah, I found this to be such a lifeline for me.
Yeah.
So really appreciate it. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you too very much. Really love having time with you. It's very special.
And I'll send let's send some healing wishes and prayers to Jeffrey, Jen, and Robert's safety and everyone that's been impacted by these fires.
Very much so. Yeah. Shall we have a few minutes of silence?
Sure.
Okay, have a beautiful day.
You too, Andrea. Thank you.
Lovely.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.